This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey everybody, this is Gary Vaynerchuk, and this is episode 285 of the Ask Gary V Show. And this feels good. I just said to the team yesterday, it's time to do more Ask Gary V shows. It is the rebirth of my content on the internet after a long lapse of Wine Library TV. It was Ask Gary V that started it all. Andy, I don't know if you remember that. Were you an intern, Andy, at the time? Were you even here when Ask Gary V started?
I was here before D-Rock,
but it was Stunwin. Oh, well, actually, if D-Rock was a right, that makes sense. Respect. But what were you, like, officially? You were like a Calvin, right? Frank, I'm so happy you're here. A lot of what I've been talking about on my show, and I'll let you introduce yourself in a second, has been modern-day marketing, influencers, a lot of people emerging. I have a lot of passion for two things. One, I want to start making a lot more LinkedIn content. I went on a business trip to Chicago the other day, and it was just really interesting how much I think I almost miss what I would call the 40 to 60 and 80 year old business conversations that I actually spend most of my time on. I think in general, a lot of people have lost their way in tried and true business practices in today's modern world. And when I saw your email in my inbox, I immediately was like, let's get this going. Let's get this on the podcast. I think this is gonna bring tremendous value to many different audiences. And so thank you for coming up here. I know you're flying in and out from Atlanta. For the people who are watching or listening, please tell everybody who you are and a little bit of your origin story.
Okay. First, it's a real privilege to be here. Thanks, Gary. And I love your podcast, and I love the energy you bring. It's just phenomenal.
Thank you. How did you stumble on it? Do you know?
That's a good question. It's a referral from a friend.
That's awesome. Right?
So
love it. Word of mouth.
Word of mouth and a long reach.
Love it. Go ahead.
My background is most recently I was the CEO of the Home Depot. I stepped down in 2015. Before that, I worked at GE for a while, ending up as a direct report to Jack Welch, doing all the M&A activity for GE. I'm a lawyer by training, which is kind of unusual, and worked in and out of government, worked for President Reagan and President Bush. Both son and dad. And
wow.
So very, very different.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. And then
are you a Patriots fan?
I wondered whether to respond affirmatively to that, given that I listened to your show. And yes, I am a rabid Patriots fan and remember, you know, way back in the day.
Boston.
Yeah. It was the Boston Patriots.
That's right.
I actually, to show how old I am, I grew up rooting for the New York Giants because we didn't have a football.
That's right. There was no NFL before the merger.
Exactly right. But yes, I love the Patriots.
Hey everyone, it's Dustin from Team Gary V. Today I'm sharing a conversation with Gary and Frank Blake, former CEO of Home Depot. We discuss patience, customer focus, and the importance of listening. Enjoy.
Real quick, just to clarify this, if you are older than 40 and a Patriots fan, it's amazing how much less venom I have for you because you lived.
Because you went through real hard stuff.
Yeah. If you're an under 30-year-old Boston sports fan, you are so privileged and so entitled that I have no respect for you in sports. In general, I love this.
There's no sense of entitlement. That got worn off. Same with the Red Sox
fans. You were a grown man in 86 World Series.
Yeah.
How old are you now?
I'm going to be 69 in a few days.
So what are we talking about? 30, 20, what is it?
I was around in 86.
I know that. I'm trying to think about, where were you? Were you at GE?
No, I was in Washington, D.C.
I see. Did that just completely break your soul?
It was crushing.
And the ones that listen, I just want to quick, I don't know, I just told my son this story. I don't know why I'm in the mood to bring this up. It's just so, that game is crazy.
Yes.
Two outs.
Yes.
Nobody on. World Series, Shea Stadium, the Mets Stadium, said congratulations, Boston Red Sox, 1986 World Champions. Two outs, do you know this, Andy? Andy, two outs, nobody on. Red Sox were winning by one at that point, right?
Yep.
Do you know the Bill Buckner play?
Poor Bill Buckner.
So much happened before that.
Thank you, that's exactly right.
To your point, poor Buckner, it's unbelievable because he had such a real good baseball career.
Yeah,
he was like a real player.
He was a real player.
Like a real good player.
You said all that happened before that was all the good things that he had done.
No, no. In the career, we're talking about like the multiple base hits, the wild pitch. Yeah. There was a wild pitch before. Yeah. Like,
exactly.
It's way beyond that.
Pinning it all on him was not fair. But there you go. It's
okay.
It's,
so let's move on. So
it's
you grew
like
up
the
in Boston.
Kicks in the World Cup.
And you grew up in Boston. What kind of kid were you?
What kind of kid?
Were you a good student?
Reverse of your instance, yeah. I worried about everything.
Interesting.
So major worrier.
Yes.
And retained that through the rest of my life.
You know what's funny about that? I actually love that you just went there. One of the things that I have to do a better job of, or something that I believe in tremendously that I'm trying to communicate more, is there's two very opposite ways to win, and I really think they're me and you, right?
Yep.
Like you know, it's the 85 Bears who beat your beloved Patriots by a quadrillion.
This is harsh.
Which is, listen,
is very tough.
It's not that harsh. Yeah, you won a lot of Super Bowls.
Sure,
it's way more harsh
true,
for me. I haven't even been to one. You know, 85 Bears, right? When I hear warrior or, you know, lawyer by trade, like, that's good because that's an extreme version of a defense that leads to offense.
Yep.
And what I am is like the Loyola Marymount, like, college team from the late 80s, early 90s that were winning basketball games 157 to 139.
Yep.
You know?
But one of the things
I learned is
when I became the CEO of the Home Depot, which was a very unexpected turn of events, but when I became CEO, one of the great phrases that stuck in my head was Colin Powell's, optimism is a force multiplier.
Yes.
And you learn that as a leader.
Yes.
That it's one thing to be worrying in your office and, you know, here's what could go wrong. But externally, it is optimism. And that's what drives the organization, is here's the vision of the future. This is the vision we're marching towards. And you have to be optimistic.
Let me ask you a question. As somebody who's consumed this content and who, actually, you know what, before I go there, talk to me about the unexpected turn of events. I'd love to know the story, you know? Home Depot's super iconic business. Does that mean, how long were you at Home Depot before that?
So I was at Home Depot 5 years before that, and then I was the CEO for 8 years.
Understood. So that's incredible.
I came from GE. I had done M&A activity at GE. I then did the same for Home Depot and some other things. I tell the story, and it happens to be true, that the nanosecond before the board called me and asked me to be the CEO, they parted ways with my predecessor, I had no thought that I'd be the CEO.
That left field.
Wasn't planning on it. Not strategizing, here's what I'd
right.
do if you, I were running
you weren't
this.
Doing the corporate ambition
nope.
strategy
nope.
thing
nope.
to
nope.
get it?
Nope, I
wasn't. Didn't even, ooh, that was interesting what you were about to say. Didn't even like have like fishing one day
nope.
be like, well, if I was the CEO,
right.
I
would. Not even driving dark on a rainy
Andy
night,
does that every
here's,
day
what, here's what I'd do.
And that's what happened.
Yep, and so partly as a consequence of that, I thought, long and hard about leadership, what leadership means, what it means to take an organization. At the time, Home Depot had about 350,000 associates. Now it's got over 400,000. But leading a real organization of scale.
Yes.
And how
that's
you do
incredible.
That. Yeah. But anyway, back to the basic concept. While I'm a warrior, I believe that you need optimism. You actually,
I totally
and
understand.
Probably you need both. And probably as much as you say you're an optimist, you actually
oh,
are
I play,
looking around corners and thinking
that's
about.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Like,
right.
First of all, I surround myself with defense.
Right.
And defense comes natural to me because I'm an immigrant. My dad was pure defense.
Right.
So I watched an operator
right.
be defense.
Right.
He was great at it. I mean, he's still great at it.
Well, you can't be in retail without worrying a little
no.
bit. Every day
I mean, you're
is
taking
sales
on so
every
much
day.
Risk.
Yeah.
You know, like, what's really tough about the liquor business is that what Home Depot's advantage and other retailers have that we didn't is that because of prohibition, liquor in America became state regulated, which meant that you could only buy from specific wholesalers, which eliminated any of your leverage. You know, we didn't have trade dollars. We didn't have all these great things that are profit centers for retailers.
Yeah.
What are you up to now?
So since retiring from Home Depot, I'm on some public company boards. I'm the non-executive chair of Delta Airlines.
Very nice.
I'm on the board of Procter & Gamble and on the board of Macy's here in New York.
How?
I do some nonprofit boards. And part of what has me so fascinated about the podcast world is producing a podcast called Crazy Good Turns, where we take people who do exceptionally kind things for other people and just highlight.
And when
them
did you start that?
We started 2 years ago.
And who's we?
So the person I'm doing it with, his name is Brad Shaw, and he worked at Home Depot while I was there. And
are you the host
of
the show?
No. So no. I produce is a fancy word for saying I pay for it.
I understand. Yeah. I love it. I'm looking forward to checking it out. Yeah. But let me ask you a question. From your perspective, from your long, gifted career, what's the number one mistake, and now sitting on these boards, and it sounds like you've consumed my content, but I'm trying to think about where I talk. I don't go unbelievably deep into my my passionate point of view of how vulnerable the Fortune 5000 are in today's ever-changing environment. You know, what do you believe at this moment is the biggest mistake senior executives, C-suite, or the influencers of the C-suite of Fortune 500 companies are? When I say that, what pops to mind first?
The first thing that pops to mind is that great organizations, I believe, great organizations become great organizations because they're focused on their customer and they are the best at answering a particular customer problem, solving a particular
product
customer problem, whatever
fit,
it is.
Right?
As they get more successful and add people and add organizational structure, there's like some law of business physics that they start getting much more interested in the organization.
Itself.
Itself. And what's good.
They go from offense to defense.
And what's good for the organization. So.
AKA the short-term profit margin of the organization.
Or AKA more often, AKA I'd like my function to be bigger next year than it was this year.
The executives within them, right? The guy all or the gal
through,
running.
All through the leadership, from the senior leadership to the middle management. If you ask me, I mean, it's a fascinating thing when you look at incentives and how corporations run. We try to incentivize people for the whole business through stock options and the like. But I honestly think a lot of people, if you gave them the choice, which is our stock could go up, or you could have a third more people reporting to you next year than you do this year, they choose the latter.
Because you believe, and I agree with you, that ego is grossly underestimated in the halls of the business world.
Yep. And it's really easy to lose sight of the customer. It's just so easy to get absorbed in your own problems rather than your customer's problems. And you see it every day in businesses.
I see it.
You know, innovative new companies steal
win.
A march,
of course,
and they win.
Because they come in religious about the
exactly.
problem of the moment.
Exactly.
Andy, give us the first question. Because I was feeling myself about to get into a 40-minute rant with Frank, and I was like, you know what, let me break this up, otherwise I'll ruin the show.
First question is from Brian Jackson.
Brian Jackson.
Yes.
From where, or you don't know?
No. Let me pull up his profile.
Sure.
He is from greater Atlanta area.
All okay. Right. Brian Jackson.
Insurance.
Okay.
He asks, what are the key differences that Frank sees between the corporate executive world and the entrepreneurship world?
And Frank, before you answer that, how much time do you spend or have you spent in the entrepreneurial landscape?
Oh, a fraction compared to, I mean, I have spent most, I mean, I started in an entrepreneurial world.
Environment, yep.
In a law
lawyer,
firm.
Of course.
I started my own law firm with a group of friends.
Love that.
But the bulk of my career has been with the corporate world. I think the big difference entrepreneurially versus the corporate perspective is that, at least for me,
it was 1 minute's point of view.
The energy.
Yes.
So I believe regardless of where you are, large bureaucracy or an entrepreneurial world, you have to radiate out and have a lot of energy. You can survive in the corporate world without that. From what I've observed, you can't survive in the entrepreneurial world without that. There's just the headwinds.
And by the way, I think, you know, to that observation, I think the reason you can survive in the corporate world is you're starting at such a big base,
exactly,
you're actually declining just as much as the entrepreneur. But when you start with 1,000 pedals, you know, versus four, when you lose four pedals, you're out. Whereas the corporation still has 996.
Exactly right.
I think that, you know, it's funny, you led me to something that I've been thinking a lot about recently, which is nothing stands still, yet my observation of the Fortune 1000 is that they think it's actually still, when what's actually happening is it's declining, they just can't see it.
There are many sweaters that they wear that mask the outside temperature, and they can stay warm even when it's getting very cold outside. So that's the biggest difference, because as an entrepreneur, if it's freezing outside, you know it's freezing outside, and you do whatever the hell you need to do to get out of the sticks and light a fire.
Where,
and the company's
not
necessarily.
Frank, where do you sit with technology? Like, how teched out or not teched out are you? Like, are you addicted to your phone? Do you, you know, are you mainly a Netflix watcher? Like,
so mainly a Netflix watcher. Personally, I don't know. I don't know where you'd put me in a 1 to 10 scale of adaptation to new technologies. What I can tell you from a business perspective is that you see everything in the world impacted by the new technologies and the new capabilities. You think about the Home Depot kind of world, building materials you wouldn't think of as, wow, this is going to be massively
disrupted.
And yet, you know, just consider the humble light bulb and what's happened to the light bulb and the amount of intelligence that's now in a light bulb. I believe, personally, a decade from now, you know, this trough are overhead. People will kind of look at that the way we look at
gas lamp lit streets.
Oh, isn't that quaint? They had to put this in a troffer.
That's exactly right.
Instead of embedding the chips in
1,000%.
Yeah. So,
what about personally?
So personally, I've watch Netflix. I'm.
What are you watching?
So I'm peculiar on that. I watch foreign TV shows. So
interesting.
And Swedish and Norwegian and Danish foreign TV shows. So
I love that.
Just,
that's your style.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of Netflix.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Netflix.
I love that.
A lot of.
And what about email, texting, social media? Where are you at with that?
So social media, when I was the CEO of Home Depot, I did a lot on Twitter. I'm a deep believer in the power of those media to say thank you to people. In fact, one of the things we're doing on Crazy Good Turns is starting a, in fact, we're launching it with this show, hashtag GratefulGram.
GratefulGram.
Just taking the time to say thank you for to people who've done extraordinary things.
Frank, it's interesting you're saying this. I'm a big believer that negativity right now is dramatically louder than positivity.
Right.
Do you feel that is true? Do you feel a sense of responsibility? Do you feel that people who are happy and positive have some sort of like sense of responsibility? Do you feel like it's an interesting human element? Like, what's your take on positivity versus negativity, optimism versus,
I got lots of takes on this, and it is a
hot takes with Frank.
And it is a passion, because in leading an organization of 350,000 people,
which is absurd,
the most,
Andy's pissed about the 20 he's got,
the most significant tool in a way of moving an organization is with positive recognition and celebration. People understand that in a way that they don't understand anything else. So if you give them a story about here's what success looks like, they can actually relate to that. Where, you know, memos that come from the corner office, everybody goes, who gives a shit?
Nobody's reading them.
Right, nobody reads them.
But it's the amount of money being spent in Fortune 500 land right now on information in PDF and memo form that gets consumed by no one is staggering.
Staggering. And so particularly starting as the leader of a company where no one knew who the hell I was, one of the things,
because even though you were there, you were so not, you weren't personally branding.
I wasn't.
The organization wasn't.
No one knew who I was.
People were like, what the fuck?
Right. Who is this guy?
What about the street? What did the street do?
Yeah. Who is this guy? No, same thing.
Wait, real quick. Did you love that? Tell the truth.
No.
You were worried about it.
Oh, no, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you didn't take the point of view of like, cool, I'm underestimated, I'm going to rise like a phoenix and stick it to everyone. You took the, okay, I have 400,000 people, I have to get them to know who I am quickly, otherwise I'll be in trouble here.
So my response to the board when they first called was...
Are you out of your mind?
I said, you need to take a day and think about this. You need to hire somebody who's actually understands retail much better than I do. Unfortunately, and I need
who
to
was the force of the do
it.
You have a sense of who the force was on the board
that, oh sure, our lead director Ken Langone.
I know Kenny.
He is a force of nature. If you live here in New York,
I mean, like, it was funny, the first time I met Ken in his office, all we talked about was that the fact that both of us sold flowers by ripping it out of the ground as 5-year-olds. That was our kinship.
Ken is one of the he is one of the most generous people I have ever met. Period.
Because he cares about legacy.
And he cares about people.
That's right.
So
when you love people, it's easy.
He loves people. And walking a Home Depot store with him was one of the great treats in life, because every single associate, he would put his arm around and really, you'd feel that connection with the associate.
Yeah.
So it was really, Ken was the moving force behind
it. It makes sense.
But anyway, so my theory on recognition and thanking people on the business side, and there are lots of other aspects to it, is if... or a Twitter photo or something like that, which I would do whenever I was in stores, is, gee, if I, as the CEO, do this and send you a note or send, you know, we take a photograph together, first I'm recognizing you and specific about what you're doing well, but also you now have some self-interest in my being famous. So 100%. You know this from selling baseball cards, right? If I've got the signed baseball card of whoever it is, you know, Carl Yastrzemski, I'd like him to do well, because that card will be more valuable.
Right? Of course.
So if
I basically willed Kenny Lofton's career into existence. Sorry, Kenny. You know?
There you go. Well, you got the basic principle.
I totally understand.
Yeah. But I do think that there's too much negativity. I think that there is so much psychic return from being grateful and saying thank you to people.
Do you believe people find what they're looking for?
Yes.
Me
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
I think this is what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm fascinated by this. Like, in everything, there's good and bad, and like, which one do you want to see?
Yeah, exactly right.
It's
exactly
the class. Right. It's very, very interesting. Yeah. Well, I love competition, sports and everything.
Yeah.
You know, when you were, you know, let's talk about the last year or last 2 years of being the CEO of Home Depot. You know, how did you view competition? Who did you feel was a threat? Was it a secondary player like a Lowe's or a thing of that nature?
thank you for that description.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Was it the emerging beast of an Amazon?
It was absolutely Amazon. So
and does that continue to be the case?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because
absolutely.
I see it.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
It's interesting. I had a phone call the other day with a company where they were like, we're in trouble. All our business is being done at Home Depot. They've been great to us, but they, right, and this was a very smart businessman.
Yeah.
They're like, rightfully so, they're going to private label.
Yeah.
They need their margin. You know, and weird, I've listened to 3 or 4 of your videos, and I just started and this is a big company. It's not like a kid with like, you know, 6 jars of jam. And he's like, we're doing Amazon now, and this is actually good. And I was like, wow. And then I started asking questions. I'm like, he and the organization is probably a 1.7 on the 10 execution on Amazon.
Right.
And they're already like, oh my God, this is the golden goose. And I'm like, wow, there's an 8.3 delta there. Wait till they actually understand what the hell this is.
Yeah. It, not knowing the company, but it should be the case that that's a great time for Home Depot or any other retailer to have the discussion with that vendor on your future is better with us. And here's why your future is better with us, and here's how we'll make your future better.
Well, you know
with
what's
us.
Interesting? The inevitable channel conflict between retail, I mean, let's talk about Procter as a whole. Let's use Johnson & Johnson. I don't want to put you to.
Right.
Like, that world. The inevitable channel conflict between them and Walmart and Target itself, while all the startups go direct to consumer in this new environment, is going to be one of the most fascinating business debates and battles of the last 200 years.
Yep.
I'm so fat. Like, I wish I was like a Ken Auletta and wrote books like this. I'd start now. The great channel conflict wars it's just going to play out.
Well, it's a channel. It's the issues of channel conflict, the premium on innovation and focus on the customer.
Yeah, but you know what's so interesting about that? And definitely the focus on the customer. That's all. Right. By the way, the attention of the customer is my religion.
Yeah.
It's all I got.
Yeah.
But yeah. Back to the first one, I will tell you one of the things that I absolutely believe is a vulnerability of the biggest companies in the world, which is they overestimate their internal R&D at times because they're spending so much on it. The problem is, sometimes the other person, Andy K, may not care that his shave is now 1/100th of an inch closer, even though Gillette spent $87 million on it.
Again, not to get it, but it's obviously a value question.
That's
and
right.
And is your innovation bringing the consumer the value?
And I think that's right. And I think unfortunately, people look at these big companies who are desperate to help as well. They look at how much they're spending on R&D. Versus the reality of the value prop to the consumer.
Yeah, whole nother topic that we could go for hours on, which is how do large companies innovate? How do they think about innovation? Yeah, it's
LinkedIn.
And it's going to be a big.
Do you use
big
LinkedIn?
Topic. I do.
Do you consume content on LinkedIn? Or do you use it more to reach out or answer email or like how do you use LinkedIn?
So I use LinkedIn frankly much more passively.
Yes.
So
what do you use it for, if anything?
Searching for people that I want to contact or people who contact me.
Yeah.
Because it's a.
How often will you look at LinkedIn? Once a week? Once a day?
Once a week.
Once a week.
Once a week.
What about email?
Yeah.
All day?
Email. I try to discipline myself and not spend too much time on it. But yeah, I'll certainly in the morning. Early in the morning and at the end of the day, try to deal with emails.
Andy, question.
A little bit of a long-winded question.
No worries.
Dave mentioned in person.
Should we give Andy the mic, maybe? Yeah, Andy, grab the mic for him.
Dave Kletch in Albuquerque, Enterprise Sales Director at CenturyLink. I worked at HD back when Bob Nardelli took over and brought in people into what they called the SLP program. Bob came in during a time of transition and change was not as widely accepted as had been hoped. Frank came in and took over and was able to turn things around and increase shareholder value when Bob resigned. My question would be how? What did he see that Bob was missing that enabled him to drastically change the culture? They both worked at GE. Frank worked at HD under Bob, and when Bob resigned, Frank took over. Frank was able to change the culture of one of the largest corporations today. I had the pleasure of meeting Frank when I worked in Atlanta at HD Corporate in 2002, and I'm just amazed by what he was able to do after seeing behind the curtain the many issues HD had.
That's incredible. That's nice to hear.
Yeah, that's great.
What's his name?
Dave again?
Dave
Kletch.
Dave. Yeah,
all right, Dave, I got to get out to Albuquerque.
What was the, instead of worrying about what Bob or this, obviously keeping, right. Obviously having a sense of you, classy gentleman, like, right. what was the, you walk in, how long did it take you to assess the situation? Well, how much time did, because you were in it, did it take less? Or, do you think that people are unbelievably naive of what happens when they're the last line of defense? Did you all of a sudden look at everything and it was from a different angle? Like, I'd love to understand that.
So Dave will appreciate this because the SLP program that he references, my son actually started working at Home Depot and it was called the Store Leadership Program. In my son's case, and I don't know if this was true for Dave, my son returned from Iraq. It was an Iraq war veteran.
Incredible,
and
thank you.
And the company made opportunities to come and work at a store.
Yes.
And he worked his way up from assistant store manager to store manager. And now, he still works at the company at a different job.
Interesting.
So part of the answer to how did I know or how did I develop a point of view on what needed to be fixed was...
You had somebody in the trenches.
Exactly. And I had somebody in the trenches who... So the problem, again, with large companies, actually companies any size, is the leaders are the frog that the company boils. So gradually everybody molds themselves to what they think you as the leader wants to
the
hear.
End.
And you stop hearing what you need to hear, and people just know that it's in their self-interest. If you say how are things going, it's in their self-interest to say, Gary, they're going great, you're awesome, please go. I mean, they just...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Anyway, really,
so my son would tell me what was actually going on.
I apologize to interrupt, but I have to ask you this in question. Yeah. because boy, do I like a lot of things coming out of your mouth. I'm starting to really understand why you like my content. Yeah. Reviews. What do you think about reviews?
You mean on the internet?
No, I mean a company reviewing its own employees and the process of.
Oh, wow. All right, so that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother discussion.
Your quick hot takes on reviews.
So quick hot takes honestly, I didn't do what's called 360 reviews because I think that they're bullshit. Yeah,
they're bullshit because they're no different than what you were just saying before, which is the humans that are reviewing the humans have their own self-interest in mind in the review.
Thank you. Exactly right.
This is, you know, honestly, because I'm going to use a lot of this content for LinkedIn. You and I right now, and I'm not kidding, this is how I think about the new world of distribution, could literally right now make a video clip and have an article accompanied by that that should completely take over all of LinkedIn. The number one conversation that companies need to start having is reviews.
Right.
Because it is fundamentally broken at a level that isn't even remotely close to servicing the organization and more importantly, the people within it.
Yep, I agree. I would also, I mean, and it starts at such a basic level. I mean, reviews is like is one of the things that's broken. But in most companies, most places, think about the basic things like when you promote someone. Does anyone explain why this person was promoted so that everybody in the organization goes, oh, I understand why Joe or Jane got that promotion because they did A, B, C, D, and E. And that's what the business is
looking for. I love where you're going. Talk to me about A, B, C, and D. In one man's point of view, yours, how much of that needs to be black and white and how much of that needs to be gray, right?
It can be whatever it is. It can be all...
That's the DNA of the organization, right?
Exactly. What people will conform to is what they see is required
to advance.
Develop their own success.
You know, Frank, you like this. A lot of people ask me a lot of like why we were able to grow so quickly in the advertising world, especially by a founder who came from the liquor industry and surprised a lot of people. It was because we were HR driven. The first 5 to 7 years of this company was you were rewarded if you were an A person and a C executor. Now, I've also now started to change that because what got you there doesn't get you to the next place.
Right.
But, you know, it's super interesting to me that people don't understand. The number one thing that bothers me right now, talking to senior leaders, especially if her title is CEO, is when they start complaining about their team, when I tell them, wait a minute, you're creating the incentive. Gary, this is, Frank, when I tell you this happens a million times a year for me. Gary, I agree with you, but my team, I can't get them to spend more on Facebook. I go, Carol, I got a big idea.
Right.
If you make their bonus predicated on them having to spend $1 million on Facebook ads per month, miraculously, it's going to happen, Carol.
Yep. I had a great activist investor on the Home Depot board. He was one of the best board members. He had a great phrase. He said, it can be very hard to herd cats, but you can move their food.
I couldn't agree more.
That's pretty fundamental.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the, you need not only on the HR reviews, why are people getting promoted? Because otherwise,
let's get a call from there. People on Instagram, put up your phone numbers. We're gonna let one of you call in now. Hand it over to Andy. You've been listening along. Ask away. Go ahead, Frank. I apologize.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think that's right.
Yeah.
What was the thing? So you had people like whether it was
Jack. Jack was very gracious and
you had Langone and these people. Yeah. But I want to ask a different question. You had, when you start with Langone and Jack, who had it better than you, right? Kind of thing.
Exactly right.
What was the biggest thing that changed in the reality? You know, the big thing that I think people that have won historically struggle with is that things have changed since they were playing. I'll give you a good example. I am so fascinated about Coach Gruden with the Raiders. What he's doing in his free agency right now and what I think he's doing is building a team for an NFL that doesn't exist anymore. And I'm curious, if he's been out of the game, will he be successful? I think about Joe Gibbs coming back and not being successful.
Yeah.
What was the peak from, you had all these icons, these mentors, you had your own career. Mm. What ended up being not true that, you know, over some dinners as you were being thoughtful and figuring out what was because of the era you were playing in, maybe the internet age, maybe the way millennials were emerging, whatever it might be, what was the piece of advice or tried and true thing, what something Colin Powell said in a book or something Kenny Langone said over breakfast or something that Jack Welch sent you a letter about that actually when played out was not as true as it might have been in 87, 78, 64?
Rather than what they might have said, I'll give you what I thought the job was and what I learned it to be. What
Please.
I thought the job was, and somebody very bravely came into my office about 60 days into being a CEO and just said, hey, you're really fucking this up, and here's why.
It's amazing.
And the description was, he showed all these gears interconnected. And he said, look what happens if the top gear is spinning madly. And I had internalized the job of the CEO is I make decisions. I make fast decisions. I make good decisions.
Right.
But that's my job. I make decisions. And this guy was very creative. Put on this chart and he said, look at what happens. You get the top gear spinning. And the gears at the bottom are just going out of control. He said, visualize your job. Your job is to feel when the smallest gear is moving. That's your job.
Very good.
And if you look, so I go, gosh, that's a different way of looking at my job. I'm not going in my office. I'm not, sending out decisions. I am actually trying to spend more time figuring out what is moving on the smallest gears because those are the ones closest to the customer. I don't know that that's I think that was probably always true.
Yeah.
But there was some sense in which I definitely had it wrong. I had a wrong notion of how to do it. And learn that you
had
to flip it upside down.
I love that. Andy, you got a question?
Not yet.
Okay. While Andy's pulling up the last question, this will be interesting to me now that I've got a sense of you. What in your consumption of my content early on from that word of mouth? What, you know, in a world where you've read a lot of stuff, you're not on your first day here.
Right.
Like, what even made you say, wait a minute, this guy's up to something?
So a couple of things. The first is energy level. So yeah.
You believe in that.
I'm a believer in energy. And you're
period.
And you're somebody who just you can
yep.
feel the energy. The second is I'm a deep believer in the kind of I call it the simplicity on the other side of complexity. So there are people who are simple, but it's simple. And just simple isn't much value. But somebody who's actually processed stuff and can then say, as you do, all right, here's the word. You know, the word is don't be entitled, or the word is attention.
The ability to synthesize big data or information and make it consumable to the end consumer.
Yes. That's hugely powerful. Hugely powerful.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you caught that quickly.
Yeah. And I think that's why people want to listen. They want to go, God, this guy's getting input.
It's how I'm able to move
right.
people, organizations.
Right.
And who are we calling?
Samari
Robinson. Samari?
Hi. Holy cow. Beautiful.
You're through. Yep. You're through. You're here with me and Frank.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe this just happened. Holy cow.
What's your question, my
Hello,
friend?
Mr. V. My question is, I want to affect the change in a large group of people towards God. And I need to get their attention to do it. And how do I do it?
One more time. Say it a little slower. You're trying to do what?
I want to affect a change in a large group of people towards God.
And in what?
Towards God.
Oh, good. Very nice. You want to move a lot of people's attention towards God.
Yes.
Okay.
I just want to, be positive.
Okay. And so
helpful. Help the world.
Okay, fair enough. So I think I'll take a stab and then Frank will jump in. I think one of the biggest mistakes, especially a young person on their journey that wants to bring impact or affect something, is they don't realize it's more about listening than talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, what has really worked is, there's a lot of confusion to all my talking. I produce so much content. First of all, in the first 15 years of my career, I didn't say a word. I did a lot of listening and watching.
Right.
And then even now, I read my comments more than I do anything else. So I think first of all, you need to deploy patience. How old are you?
I'm 18.
Right. So you need to realize that if you really want to impact the world, you'll probably start seeing dividends when you flip your numbers around and you're 81, right?
Mm.
And when you're 18, that sounds absurd because that's like four lifetimes from now. But that is the reality, my friend. Like if you were calling our show right now and saying, I want to change the world, I want to bring impact, I want to bring positivity, I want to turn people towards God, that's amazing. I just need you to understand, that's not like saying I'm going to walk five blocks. You're trying to boil the ocean. You're going for a big, big thing. And that needs to be life's work. And if it's life's work, you need to be patient and realize that at 36, which is double your age now, you're a child. Frank laughs at 36 years old. That's a baby, you know? And so I would say patience and listening are gonna be your two pillars. Frank?
That's great. That's a great response. Patience and listening. And I think the modeling the behavior that you wanna see in others. So.
Set the example.
Yeah, set the example.
My friend, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Why?
Well, I want to do it because I want to be helpful. I want to leave a legacy when I die. You know?
That's your selfishness is, because the selfishness is the key, right? To me, I'm always curious about one's selfishness when they're being selfless, right? Like for me, mm-hmm. I was so overloved by my mother. I love the attention and the admiration, which is what I got my whole life, that it's obvious to me that what I figured out subconsciously is that the only way to actually get that at massive scale is to do it for others, not for yourself, right? Do you want a legacy because that then means fame and money? Do you want the statue? Do you
want
to prove something to your dad? Like for real, why? For real.
I want it. When I do something good, it feels good.
That's good, man.
I'm serious.
I believe
you. It is selfish. It's selfish, but it feels good doing good things. And you know, I'm not gonna lie. When I preach the Bible to people, or you know, when I preach the Bible to people and I, you know, try to be positive and get people's attention and entertain people, because I also make videos online right now.
Yep.
You know, it feels good. It feels good.
Good, man.
Helping people, and I want to be positive and get as much attention as possible. You know, I want to make movies. I want to build my own production studios and, you know, stuff like that. I want to be an actor, director, a whole bunch of stuff.
Do you think getting people's attention is the way to do that? Do you think in Tyler Perry terms?
Yeah. At some point, I want to be at that point.
Makes sense.
I'm sick.
Listen,
that's my goal.
Listen, let me give you two more cents on a goal like this during a time like this. Spend all your time. So my whole career, I was innovating. I was doing things that hadn't been accepted yet. And the biggest piece mm-hmm. of advice that I give to people is spend no time on the people that are saying no. Spend all your time on the people that are saying yes. They're spending too much time on the people that are saying no. They get so passionate mm-hmm. in converting somebody versus realizing there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions that are saying yes right in front of them, but they go on the defense of like converting somebody. And so I spit my truths about business and nobody listens at first because it doesn't have short-term ROI, mm-hmm. but over time it comes to me. I'm telling you right now, focus on the yeses, not converting the nos.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
You got it, brother. Take care of yourself.
Man, I love it. Thank you guys so much.
You got it. Yeah, it's time to go. I know you have to go. Frank, you get to ask the question of the day. I know you just pointed it's 2:01. We're 1 minute over. I apologize, but I'm really enjoying this. Every guest gets to ask the question of the day. You've got thousands of people listening, entrepreneurs, executives. What would be a question? This is a good opportunity for you to get some insights, maybe about the things you're up to with your podcast or just curiosities you have. The question of the day to the Vayner Nation.
So my question of the day is asking folks to whom do they have a sense of gratitude right now? If it pops into their mind, to whom are they grateful? And then the second question related to that is go express it.
I love it.
Go express it.
I love you for that.
Go do that.
This was unbelievable. You know, I'm getting 80, 90 emails, 100 emails a week of like, I want to be in your podcast, your big podcast, you know, I want to be in the Ask Gary Vee show. We haven't done an Ask Gary Vee show in forever. It was so funny when yours came. You know, intuition's a funny thing. I'm glad we did this. Thank you for being up here.
Thank you.
I appreciate having you.